You know, my passport really doesn't get the workout I wish it would. I mean, I'm grateful, seriously, that I get to roam around in our beautiful country, but there's really nothing quite like going out there, right? Going out somewhere that's totally different from where you live, where you might not know the language or the culture or the food, and you just let the enormity of the world wash over you, right? And you remind yourself that there are a zillion different ways to live a life on this planet. And you could feel the humility and welcome of being a guest. You know, Tony Bourdain once said that the more I travel, the less I know. And isn't that literally what having a sense of wonder is all about? This week, we are all about the life-changing magic of getting out of town. Through the Black Sea, to Haiti, to France, and more. And our first stop is Thailand. Andy Ricker, the chef owner of Pok Pok in Portland, has spent over 30 years traveling and cooking in Thailand, and the last 15, sharing what he's learned to cook there with the rest of the world. He's got a new book out called Pok Pok Noodles, and Sally Swift caught up with him to talk about carbs, yes, but also about the traveling life in Thailand. Have a listen.
Andy Ricker, so nice to have you in our hemisphere.
It's great to be in this hemisphere.
So I want to talk to you about Thailand, obviously, because you have been there for a really, really long time. You started visiting in the 80s, right?
Yeah, the first time, I believe, was 1985. I'd have to look back three passports back to figure it out, but I think it was 85.
And how has it changed in these years?
I think that Thailand has gotten a lot more cosmopolitan, even in the rural areas. That, you know, they're connected and they're aware. The cities have gotten quite cosmopolitan. The Bangkok feels like an international city. I mean, the first time I went there, there wasn't that presence of other folks from other countries walking around. It was very, very insular. The Thai folks tend to be somewhat, I don't know if xenophobic is the right word, but they definitely feel that Thailand is for Thai people, mostly, and it's fine to come and visit. So up until fairly recently, it wasn't really encouraged to come and stay.
Right.
But that seems to be changing. There's a lot more, and I think that comes down to the fact that a lot of Thai people have traveled at this point, and especially, you know, with the rise of the middle class there. You know, you'll be in Bangkok at a restaurant, and there'll be folks from India, and folks from Denmark, and folks from Niger, folks from all over the place, America, Israel. And while there used to be folks coming from those places, there weren't that many that were just living, you know,
right,
like raising families and working and stuff like that, owning businesses.
If someone were to ask you, someone who's never been to Thailand before, where would you send them?
The first thing I do is ask a question of them. I say, what is it that you want? You know, because Thailand can be whatever you want it to be. You can go and spend, you know, you can have a fantastic time, go to the beach and just have a beach holiday. Or you can go into the mountains and go hiking into national parks. Or you could go up a river trip. Or you could be in a big city or a small town. It just really kind of depends on what you're into. And once I have that kind of information, I just tell them, go, pick a place to start, and then don't make too many plans.
Right.
You know, the good thing about traveling is that you meet people along the way, right? And often you'll arrive somewhere thinking you want to go somewhere. And somebody will say, hey, but we're going to this place and we've heard it's really great. Here's the pictures. My friend was just there. It's amazing.
Right.
Just as a matter of principle, I like to be flexible when I travel.
Mm-hmm. I do want to talk about food because I want to talk about street food with you, because I think that you are one of the people in the United States that have really opened our eyes to what street food is in Asia. What was that like for you when you discovered that scene there? Was your mind blown? It seems just to be so enormous and complicated and wonderful.
So the first time I went to Thailand, like so many other travelers, I didn't have any language skills. And I mean, this is back in the 80s,
right,
for the first time. And the infrastructure there wasn't super, so there wasn't a lot of places where there was a sign on the outside saying, here's what we have in this restaurant, or come in here to eat this particular dish. But what you could do is you could walk down the street and you could see the food being made on the side of the street. And that made it easy because you could just say, that looks good to me. And just kind of, you know, without being able to speak the language, you just pointed a bowl and say, I'll have that.
Right.
And it was easy to get. And because I grew up in the United States where street food back then was non-existent, like the odd taco truck or something like that. So I think that was the thing that really got me was, and why I was so interested in that food initially, was because it was accessible.
And exciting.
Yeah, it was new to me. And because at the time, in America, didn't really get its big push of Thai immigration until the late 80s. So, I, you know, most of Thai food was really mysterious to me. And to be honest with you, the stuff that was really exciting to me back then is fairly mundane at this point because there's so much more interesting stuff off the street.
I want to talk about noodles because you say something in the book that I love about noodles being this great entry level for people heading to Thailand. Where does that tradition come from?
The noodles on the street? Yeah. It mostly comes from Chinese immigrants coming to Thailand in various different waves over the last couple hundred years. But it didn't really hit its stride until probably like 80 years ago, something like that. The whole idea of noodle carts on the street mm-hmm. is something that is relatively recent. It doesn't go back 500 years. Thailand is an agrarian society, or was, and people typically ate at home. And, you know, the big cities were mostly places of government and commerce, and there wasn't a large press of people working like there are now that needed a quick lunch.
Right.
So, you know, as the cities grew, that's when street food really took off.
Is there an indigenous Thai noodle? Is there something that is particularly theirs?
So there's one noodle that we think is the indigenous noodle, and that's Khnom Chin, and that's a fresh rice vermicelli noodle. And initially it was made in the royal courts because the amount of work it took was quite intense. You got to mill the rice flour, and then you have to make a dough, and you let the dough ferment, and then you pound it with a mortar and pestle, giant wooden mortar and pestle, like two people pounding at it for hours.
Wow.
To make it into this kind of more elastic texture. And then it's, you know, mixed with water, and it forms kind of a slurry. You know, in the old days, they would push it through kind of a cylindrical brass cup with a plunger with holes in the bottom, and hand press these things into a vat of boiling water. But in order to make, you know, a substantial amount of this stuff, it took a lot of labor.
And thin noodles, you know, are they very thin?
They're very thin, yeah. They're quite thin. They're like, I call them rice vermicelli because it's the closest thing.
Okay,
like
that's
angel
what we can find here is rice vermicelli. And is that different than, which I would say vermicelli, of course, I'm sorry. But and are rice stick noodles close to them as well?
Okay, so now we get into the naming regimens here.
This was going to be a slippery slope.
Well, when J.J. Good and I were writing this book, we would go back and forth because, you know, J.J. is a stickler and he wants to make sure that the information that we put in the book is accurate and people can follow it. And I just say, you know, rice vermicelli or vermicelli. And he would say, yeah, but is it rice stick? And I'd say, show me the package. And he'd show me a package and I'd say, no, that's not it.
Okay.
And he'd show me something else. And I'd go, okay, well... And I'd show him a package. This is what it is. And sometimes it says bun on the outside if it's Vietnamese, B-U-N. Other times it says rice stick. Sometimes it says vermicelli. Sometimes it says many different things. So what we've come down to is trying to find the way it's most commonly sold here. And it's most commonly sold as guangji noodles or bun, Vietnamese. And it's dry and it looks like a very thin white piece of spaghetti, but the problem is it comes in different thicknesses.
Right.
What we look for is the fine or extra fine rice vermicelli or rice stick.
Is there a brand you like?
Three Ladies brand, I think, is a good one.
I always love these names.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to talk to you in general about cooking Asian noodles because I think that we don't really understand what the proper technique is. Do you soak it? Does it go in boiling water? Do you salt the water? What's protocol on Asian noodles?
Well, it depends on the kind of noodles.
Yeah.
There's some that you don't cook at all till you actually assemble the dish. And there's others that you have to soak in advance. There's others that you just take from the state they're in when you buy them and boil them and throw them into stuff. So it really depends. So for instance, I'll give you a couple of examples. Glass noodles or bean thread noodles or cellophane noodles. Here in the West, they always come dry and they're in like a little bundle. And you have to soak those for quite some time in hot water before you cook them. Or else they don't saturate. They don't get all the water that they need soaked into them to become a noodle that's edible or that tastes good.
So you'd soak them and then boil them?
Yes. So you soak them until they're pliable, probably about 20 or 30 minutes in quite warm or hot tap water.
Right.
And then you boil them briefly before you eat them.
And salted water? Not salted water?
Typically not salted water. Most of the time people don't salt the water before they do noodles. But there's other noodles. So for instance, senyai, kwetiau senyai, which is fresh wide rice noodles, which you can buy in Chinese markets, in Asian, Southeast Asian markets. And those are made in a factory, but they don't dry them. They make them and they wrap them in packets and send them to the market. And the best ones, they don't refrigerate them. But that only happens in the markets where they make the noodles. So, for instance, in L.A., you can get really fresh, warm, beautiful rice, you know, flat, wide rice noodles in the morning because they've just been delivered from the San Gabriel Valley to all the stores around the city. But in Portland, we don't have that, so they put them in refrigerator trucks and carry them up. So by the time you get them up there, they're like a hard, glob of stuck together noodle. That type of noodle, typically for, say, pet siu or something, a stir-fried noodle, you would take it directly out of the package and just throw it into the pan and start frying it. Or you might throw it into a noodle basket and dip it in hot water just to heat it up right before you put it in soup.
I want to ask you about instant ramen, because I am quite fascinated to see that you had a couple recipes in the book about them. What is their role in Thailand?
So ramen in Thailand is, you know, it's kind of like the ubiquitous snack for students. And once you gain a taste for
not
them,
just
it
kind of
sticks around.
I mean, it's everywhere.
Well, everywhere, Thais are really obsessed, and they're obsessed with one particular brand called Mama. And they're so obsessed with it that basically it's kind of like we call a tissue Kleenex,
oh,
right?
Really?
So it's Mama is ramen. You can eat it raw with the flavor packet like sprinkled on it
like
as a snack.
Like bite the chunk, the box?
You just eat the plastic and everything. No, they come in little plastic containers. You pull out the brick and you can kind of break it up and eat it like a snack.
Right.
Or you can eat it the way it says to eat it on the package.
Right.
You also see it around the country at noodle stalls as an option for noodles. Like typically you'll go to a noodle soup stall and they'll say, what kind of noodle do you want with your soup? Do you want thin rice noodles, wide rice noodles? Do you want really, really, really fine rice noodles? Do you want bummy or wheat noodles? Or you want wun sen, which is the glass noodle? But they often have mama as an option as well. So you can get instant ramen in your boat noodles if you want.
That is amazing to me.
How fun.
It's a worldwide thing. Okay, my last question for you once and for all. Chopsticks or no chopsticks in Thailand?
Chopsticks in Thailand for noodles, for sure, and for Chinese food and Japanese food. But typically, you know, historically, Thai people ate food with their hands and with a spoon and fork. Spoon and fork is more of a recent thing, in the last 150 years or so. Kind of the like spoon to put the food in your mouth, fork to push the food onto the spoon. But, you know, there's a lot of Chinese folks that live in Thailand, and the influence there is very, very strong. So you see it at noodle shops, you see it at Chinese restaurants, and more recently, a lot of Japanese restaurants come through, so you see it there too.
Okay, it's the last word from you, Andy Ricker. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Andy Ricker is the author of Pok Pok Noodles. You can find his recipe for Yam Mama, or instant ramen noodle salad, at splendidtable.org. And it is an awesome dish, especially if you don't think you're a fan of instant noodles.